Okay, well, obviously this was not the circumstances in which I thought we'd be having our first shiur of the new Zman, and this, I have to tell you, this wasn't even the originally scheduled first shiur, but in thinking about it and talking it over with Ellie, I thought obviously we would do something that was still consistent with the overall theme of the Chug, but something that would really speak to, I think, the needs and perhaps the emotions of the moment. And that is tefillah be'es tzara. There's a notion of davening, the importance, but also of the challenges of davening in a time of crisis. And obviously, we are at a tremendous, tremendous time of crisis for the Jewish people. It wouldn't take much for any of you to think this is the greatest crisis in your lifetimes. And that is unquestionably true. But you should know that it is the greatest crisis in your parents' lifetimes, and depending on how old your grandparents are, maybe even in your grandparents' lifetimes. This is unquestionably the first existential threat to the Jewish state, to Israel, certainly since the Yom Kippur War, and in many ways it's a graver threat. I'm not interested in getting into military or political analysis. Maybe someone will disagree with that, and that's fine, but it's either number one or number two. And we're talking about 50 years. So the pain, the death, the destruction, just the sheer inhumanity of the things that we have seen, and the crisis that still confronts us. Altif tachpes, I feel bad even saying this, but I don't think you have to be a chacham or a navi to realize that it will probably get worse before it gets better. Not in the sense of incursions. I would hope that, you know, in innocent civilians in Israel being slaughtered, I would hope that doesn't happen. Hopefully they've hardened their defenses. But in terms of what the soldiers who are going to have to attack and go into Gaza have to confront, and unless we merit a miracle like Jericho, even victory will come at a heavy price. And it's that's going to be painful for everyone involved. And therefore, we are very, very much, maybe not in the same level of shock as we were a week ago, but we are still very much in the esara that we were in a week ago. So how do we deal with that? So, you know, broadly speaking, it's two levels. There is the religious spiritual, and then there is the more pragmatic or practical, hishtadlus, and everything you put in the other basket, bitachon, tefillah, Torah, chesed, all those kind of things. So the hishtadlus, obviously first and foremost, the tip of the spear for hishtadlus, of course, is the army itself. And then there's all of the wonderful things that, and ways in which Israelis and even Jews around the world are mobilizing to help Israel. Those extra things that people are doing, you could say, are also chesed, they're also mitzvos, but they're also a form of hishtadlus. That as a country we're coming together to prepare for a very difficult period. That's no question. But in addition to the hishtadlus, obviously as believing and as religious Jews, so we believe that there is something that has to come in addition to that. Lots of people are mishtadel, not everyone is successful. And we believe that you know, that in the end, it is hashkacha that will determine our success. There could be a debate, and this is not our topic at all now, how much hashkacha will affect individuals and individual decisions within an individual's life. These can be kinds of debates that, you know, would have been interesting maybe on a different day. But I don't think anyone disagrees that when you talk about things that are affecting the entire Jewish people, especially in Eretz Yisrael, so then we believe that certainly hashkacha plays a very, very guiding hand. Now, one could ask, and again, not our topic at the moment, but one could say, if we believe Hashem is going to hopefully get us out of this tzara, then are we also implicitly believing that Hashem got us in the tzara? I assume the answer to the question is yes. Now, how far do you take that? Does that mean that every single person that died, Hashem decided you and you and you? The answer to that is maybe. That's definitely a position among Baalei Machshava. I think a very legitimate position might also be, one that I'm probably a little bit more noted to myself, is that for reasons that I can't possibly understand, Hashem allowed, maybe even wanted this to happen, But there's this idea we have. This goes back to Mitzrayim. Once the evil decree, once the mashchit is let free, he doesn't necessarily discriminate between this person and that person. And these are obviously very, very weighty and complex religious issues and philosophical issues, let's say. But I don't really want to focus on those, even though I think they're very legitimate. And in the right time, we should think about them and learn about them. And there are makoros that deal with all of these things. However, what I would prefer to speak about is a different form of hishtadlus, or a different form of, you could say, spiritual hishtadlus, or if you put hishtadlus on one end, what's another part of our religious response? Guys, there should be enough source sheets. I'm not sure if you don't see in the back there. Here, come, pass these back. And that is tefillah. It's very, very important that part of our response be in the realm of tefillah. What role does chesed play? What role does learning play? Tefillah. Again, unless this magically ends very quickly, we could have lots of shurim that are related. But as a first such topic, I want to discuss the role of tefillah. But I don't want to discuss it philosophically. I want to discuss it practically. Tefillah be'es tzar, final, if you will, philosophical point, and then we'll dive into the davening part. Tefillah, according to many, certainly according to the Rambam, can be divided into two categories. There's normal davening, and then there is tefillah be'es tzara, in time of crisis. The reason that one might want to distinguish is because even more than any other typical or normal stage of a person's life, when a person is in crisis, crisis can be something that's just affecting you, it could be something that's affecting a family member, or it could be something, in this case, that's affecting the Jewish people. But tefillah, in a moment of crisis, as many have pointed out, is not just, so to speak, davening, as if that's just davening. But tefillah in a time of crisis is ultimately a form of emunah. Many have pointed out that if a person is in crisis and then doesn't still turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't daven, that's not just, I didn't daven. That bespeaks and reflects a lack of emunah. Right? Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins this. I don't want to get into the details of where he does this, but Rav Moshe paskins this. And you may be familiar, if you're thinking in these terms, you'd be correct. It's basically Rav Moshe and others paskining no atheist in a foxhole. I'm sure you're familiar with the expression. And Rav Moshe, among others, endorses that. If a person's in crisis and they still don't turn to Hashem, that would bespeak a lack of emunah. So on the one hand, davening be'es tzara may be the most acute and most intense time that one has to daven. The context of the Rav Moshe is that he holds that non-Jews are chayiv to daven be'es tzara, even though that's not one of the seven mitzvot of Noach, but they're chayiv in emunah, in Hashem. And since this is an extension of emunah, he says they're chayiv. So that's certainly all the more so going to be applicable to us. And yet, here we come to our real topic. How people respond to the tzara when it comes to davening, I think, can be in one of two different ways. I could be wrong. I guess theoretically there are three ways. But my guess is that most people fit into two categories. And I'm going to ask, if you don't mind, it's obvious I'm going to ask you to be honest, but I'm also going to ask you to respond if you're not too shy. I'm going to ask by a show of hands who falls into what category, okay? And afterwards, I'll tell you what category I'm in. I think that theoretically a person could be davening the last week no better and no worse than they've been davening the last 6 weeks, the last 6 years, their whole life. Nothing has changed. That's possible. I'm guessing that that's the least common reality. And either way, I'm not asking that as a voting option. But I think there's two other possibilities that are the two opposite options. One possibility is that the crisis, in your case, the fact that you know, if you didn't know people in the South who were Nebuch were affected on Sunday, on Shabbos last week, you know, probably from other areas of your life, and especially from being this yeshiva, there are people who are now in harm's way. So it's certainly possible that your davening has gotten better, more intense, you've been able to have more kavana. That's certainly a possibility. The third possibility is that you're having even a harder time of davening than usual. either because you're anxious or just because you're distracted and your mind is on one of the 10,000 videos that you've seen, the really, really inspiring positive videos or really horrific painful videos, but there's so much swirling around in our head. Okay, so by show of hands, and don't be embarrassed, no one's showing off, I'm the one forcing you to be honest, but really be honest. By show of hands, how many people feel that they've been able to summon greater kavana in this past week than they may have had before that? Don't be embarrassed, it's okay, you're not showing off, I'm curious. Okay, how many people feel that they're actually having a harder time davening than they may have had previously? It's a little bit of the similar number, maybe a little bit more. A few people are saying that they're having a harder time. Most of you didn't raise your hands at all, or quite a few people didn't raise their hands. Okay, so I'll tell you, I fit into the category of it's for the most part been harder. I've had moments, unquestionably moments, that have been some of the best davening of my life in the last week. But just your standard average Shmona Esrei, I admit, I've had a hard time. I'm not being hard on myself, and I don't need to give excuses for myself, although I have plenty of them. First of all, because I'm a human being like everybody else. I happen to also be a father who has two sons and a son-in-law who got called up on Simchas Torah and pulled out of Hakafos. I work with soldiers. I'm running around doing a lot of things. Very hard to focus. And yet, there have been Tehillim that we've been saying that have been very powerful for me. In our shul, I think they're doing it in yeshiva as well, if I'm not mistaken. Tell me if I'm wrong. That we started saying it at some point last week, Avinu Malkeinu, and Shachar Sena Mincha. So, for whatever reason, in the words in the second half of Avinu Malkeinu, some of those phrases have ripped my heart out in ways that davening never has. So I will tell you, I'm not proud or embarrassed. I'm just telling you this to be real and authentic with you. I don't know if it's never happened before, but certainly not to the same extent. I would say the two times in my life that I've completely fallen apart, like uncontrollable tears while davening, were both last week and both in Avinu Malkeinu. You never know where it's going to come from. You don't always know which words are going to strike you. But I'm saying, so despite the fact that I'm, in a certain sense, quote-unquote happy, not happy with the situation, but happy with myself, so to speak, that I've been able to daven like that a few times, but I'm also a little bit upset or frustrated that I seem to have a harder time focusing my thoughts. So, al hatzad, as we might say, just in case I'm not the only one, and anyway, davening is always very hard for people. I wanted to spend the time we have today to try to give you some source-based, because you know everything we do in this chug, I always try to make sure it's source-based, but practical ways to inspire yourself, practical ways to help give you the focus that if you're naturally being focused now, that's great. You can always do better. And if you are distracted, struggling, maybe one and halavai multiple ones. None of these things are mutually exclusive. We'll get through as many as we can now, and hopefully more than one will be resonant with you that you can, you know, bring to your own life and to your own davening. And I hope Mirtz Hashem that this can be helpful and beneficial. I'll just note as a last word of, I guess you could say we're past the introduction, but the second introduction. Just in source number 4, you see the comment of the Sefer HaChassidim, which I appreciate very much in this context, who says, V'hakol lefi lev ha'adam, which is a way of saying there's no magic bullet. There's no one way that it's going to necessarily be the right way or the only way that will work for everybody. Hakol lefi lev ha'adam, different people are going to, have better strengths and different weaknesses, but more than that, different people are going to have different techniques will work. And what works for you may not work for you, and what works for me may not work for you. And that's why we try to have as many different options as possible so that hopefully we can each identify with and come away with something. So let's start with something that I consider practical, but practical in the sense of it's intellectual. Sub number 5, the Michtam Eliyahu. I don't know if that's the most popular sefer learned here, but in a lot of yeshivas it's very, very popular. It's a kind of hybrid of Musar and Machshava by Rav Dessler, who was a shkiach, I think he was, you'd call him, or shiva in Gateshead in England, and then eventually made it to Ponovich in Bnei Brak. So he has a multi-volume work called Michta Me'Eliyahu. So he makes the point where it's actually, their quote, this is the introduction to Michta Me'Eliyahu, and they're quoting this in his name, that he used to make the point, in general, not only about tefillah, ki tzrichim, or source number five, tzrichim la'avod al hamadrega hakrova lanu, lafi nekudas b'chiratenu. That is to say, we have to take things one step at a time. Now this is an important, important concept for everything that hopefully you'll experience this year and in your life of Avodas Hashem and growth. Other thinkers are big believers in, like, you know, huge jumps, one fell swoop. Rav Dessler was a believer, and I'm, especially when it comes to davening, I'm very persuaded by his approach, that, again, if in the moment you have an inspiration to have an incredible davening, no one, including Rav Dessler, would tell you not to do that. But if you're talking about building a sustainable improvement and being a better davener for the long haul, so I think he's unquestionably right. Rav Dessler says you have to take it one step at a time. You cannot expect to go, I'm not just saying this hypothetically, I'm obviously not thinking of anyone in particular. You can't, if your whole life you've been a C-minus davener, you daven every day. I'm talking about a guy who goes to minyan every day. But you struggle with kavana. You're a C-minus davener. You cannot expect that all of a sudden, boom! They attacked us. And now, I'm Rav Lichtenstein, who had like legendary kavana. I don't know if you've noticed, Rav Moshe has incredible kavana. One of the most inspiring experiences of my life was 15 years ago when I came back to the yeshiva. I was on sabbatical here that year. I hadn't even officially made aliyah. And I was here for Yom Kippur. And Rav Moshe still sat in the back. Rav Aaron was still alive then. And I sat next to him the whole year, more or less, in the base medrash. He sat parallel to where Rav Mordechai sits. The table's opposite of Rav Mordechai's little kuch. So that's where Rav Moshe used to sit. And I was sitting at that table the whole year learning with him. And that year for Yom Kippur, they gave me a seat next to him. And to daven next to Rav Moshe was like unbelievable. His kavana is like astounding. So you can't expect in one day to go from a C-minus to an A+. It's ludicrous. And again, there's a million analogies in almost any other field. It could be exercise, weightlifting, running, all sorts of things. Right? You have to build yourself up. So if your whole life you struggle with davening, and now all of a sudden it's not going to happen. What do you have to do? One step at a time. So one step at a time can mean one bracha at a time. Or it can mean saying, okay, mincha and marv are the harder ones for me, but at least let me get down chakras. Each little concrete step, take a baby step. Pick a tefillah, a part of tefillah, a bracha that really speaks to you. Right? There are some obvious ones now. Refa'enu. There are so many people who were hurt, who need refuah shalema. Right? L'yushalayim ircha, v'sechazana einenu, et semach David, sim shalom. Right? Even if you can't have kavanah on all of them yet, but pick one, make that your anchor. Okay, that's point number one. I think it's very, very important. It leads into point number two, source number six, the great Sfardi Posek, the Kaf HaChaim. So he says something which is so powerful, and it uplifted me so much a few years ago, the first time I learned this source, and I think it's so obvious, like drop the mic when you hear him say it, but it's so necessary because it goes against our natural instinct. Says the Kaf HaChaim, source number six. Misha ne'enas, he gives a mashal. Misha ne'enas ubalo machshava be'eza bracha mibercha shmon esrei. Lo yasiach daito min ashar b'mnei shlo kivin b'achas. So what's the problem he's addressing now? Something that I think we're all guilty of, and I certainly can be guilty of this. Which is you start off good. Every now and then we're just like, horrible, right? You can't even get through the first bracha with kavanah. But for the most part, we can kind of start off right. And then the wheels fall off. But because we've been davening our whole lives, before you know it, you know, we're at Baruch Aleinu or something. Whoa, where did that come from? And what happens that moment you zoom back in? So subconsciously, implicitly, many people make the mistake that the Kaf HaChaim is addressing. And they say, all right, well, another one down the tubes. I guess this is going to be another C-minus davening. And you just kind of, on autopilot, without really having kavanah to finish, because I already messed up, hopefully mincha will be better. Hopefully the next one will be better. Says the Kav HaChaim, it's a terrible mistake. He says, I'll prove it to you by way of a powerful analogy. He says, let's say you were given the job, the assignment, to carry a parcel of diamonds from the diamond cutter or distributor to the customer to the retailer. And there's 100 finely cut diamonds in this envelope, and everyone has been counted. They've been evaluated. They've been paid for. And you get, you know, clear and like repeated warnings and instructions. You better be so careful. We counted them all here. We're going to count them all when you get back. Make sure not to drop anything, to hit anything. Everything's riding on this. The deal is huge. At some point in the middle, you trip, or someone bangs into you. Somehow the bag breaks or something. You notice you're missing a few. It's horrible. I needed all 100. I'm missing a few. It's terrible, and it is. This is not the makor that's going to say, yeah, no problem, no big deal. Hashem loves you anyway. No, it's terrible. You had a job, you blew it. But says the Kav HaChaim, would it dawn on anybody to say, well, since I already dropped 6, I might as well drop the rest of them. Or I should run the rest of the way with the envelope not closed. And when I say it like that, it sounds absurd. Which is exactly what the Kav HaChaim says. Says the Kav HaChaim, would anyone do such a thing? Adarab, in the middle of the second line, who nizar betachlas azirus. On the contrary, once you realize you were missing 6, you'd be even more careful to get at least the 94 there. So what is his point? It's so powerful. It's so important. We all start off with great intentions. Halavai will make it all the way. But if we don't, and there are times that we only zoom back in when? Take 3 steps back. Okay, in that case, then we really do have to live to fight another day. But a lot of times, I know this for myself, a lot of times I'm like, whoop, I'm out. And then 2 or 3 brachas later, I'm in. And I've said all the words. I know it by heart. I could do it in my sleep. But I feel terrible. Oh my gosh. And I especially feel terrible if that happens now. Like, what kind of person am I that I can't have every word of every bracha? Klal Yisrael's at war. I have 3 children. And I can't have kavanah for every word? It would be the easiest thing, the most natural thing, to be so hard on myself that I just give up. Says the Kav HaChaim, it's a terrible mistake. Just think about the bag of diamonds. Doesn't make any sense. Of course 100 is better than 96, which is better than 86. But you would never just be dismissive of whatever was left because of the initial failures and setbacks. A half a loaf is better than none. Any bracha, any part of the oven you can have kavanah with is great. Don't give up just because it wasn't as ideal as you wanted. Point number 2. Point number 3. And almost, I think after this, everything will be mamish. I think these are very practical in the sense that if you can internalize any of these, they will practically help your davening. I'm calling it practical in that sense. But they are, as I say, more psychological or even, if you will, philosophical principles that if we internalize will help us in davening. I want to give one more of that sort, and then the rest will be practical. And that is source number 7, that's Rav Kook. Rav Kook is writing in Oras HaTshuva. And he says something which is so straightforward, it just takes him a few words to say it. But I think if we're being deeply honest, if we'll rip open our hearts, if we take the spiritual x-ray machine and we give ourselves an honest examination, I think many of us will feel that Rav Kook is talking to us. It says Rav Kook is source number 7, Mir ha'emuna bitfiloso. The reason that so many people have struggles in davening isn't because you have short attention spans. It isn't because you're the iPhone generation. It isn't because you've grown up on Twitter and on YouTube Shorts and on TikTok, Rahman al-Atslan. because you enjoy being an unwitting spy of the Communist Party of China. That's not why. That's why maybe you uniquely in your generation struggle with concentration. But newsflash, you're not the first generation to struggle with concentration and davening. So what is my generation going to blame it on? We didn't have cell phones. So it's uniquely difficult for you guys. I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying that almost to be sympathetic. You have unique challenges that I didn't have when I was your age. But it's not new. Says Rav Kook, you want to know what the deepest problem? You want to know really, really why people have trouble concentrating? It's not a concentration issue. It expresses itself in a lack of concentration. But it's coming from something much, much deeper. It comes from a lack of emunah in davening. Now he clarifies that. Let's keep on reading. Right? There might be people who say, yeah, you know why I don't daven or daven well? Because who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? God can't do. God doesn't know. God doesn't care. Who said human beings have a right to talk to God? They don't believe in davening. So if you know anything about Rav Kook, he can't imagine, for him, he believed in the Jewish people. So that can't be. And even if you think that Rav Kook's, belief in the Chiloni population was naive, or was it deep and optimistic? That's a debate that people had in his lifetime. Was Rav Kook being too naive about the non-religious, or was he being deeply, not only optimistic, but he had an insight that maybe others did not have? That's not here nor there. What about us? He's talking to us now. People in the fold. Said Rav Kook, what I really mean is, he continues, it's not that we don't believe that Hashem can do things. We doubt Hashem's ability. We doubt Hashkacha Pratis. Rather, says Rav Kook, El b'pnei dak'ut libo merov anvenuso. We're too humble. What does it mean by we're too humble? It's not that we don't believe in the koach of tefillah. We don't believe in our own worthiness to employ tefillah. Who am I to ask something of Hashem? Who am I that Hashem should listen to? We really don't believe in tefillah. We go through the motions. We do it. But if we really, really do spiritual surgery on ourselves without the anesthesia, how many of us really, really believe that our tefillah can make a difference? And if you don't really, really believe it, so why would we put in the extra effort, and it is effort, to really have kavanah? So, now, if you say to yourself, Rabbi Golub, I don't, so how do I get to having? Okay, that's beyond the scope of today's shiur. But what I am identifying for you, or I'm asking you to identify in yourselves, is to the extent that if you think about this speaks to you, then that's something you need to work on. Our belief in Hashkacha, our belief in Tefillah, is that not only can Hashem does listen to everyone. Now, he sometimes says no. Just because he listens to us doesn't mean he's going to give you everything you want. But we 100% believe you have to have what, in other contexts, in the Hasidic Sfarim, they might call gaiva de kedusha, a holy arrogance. Hashem does care about me. I am important to Hashem. And therefore, I have a right to ask. I have a right to demand. And I will repeat something I've said in my community over the last 2 days. You have a right to be angry. Express the anger in tefillah, if that's how you feel. Karav Hashem l'chol karav. You say it every day, 3 times a day. Karav Hashem l'chol karav. Hashem is close to everyone who calls out to him. Really? Every one of you feel close to Hashem every time you're talking? Every daven you feel so close to Hashem? You have to finish the pasuk. Karav Hashem l'chol karav asher yikr'uhu be'emes. It has to be be'emes. It has to be authentic. If you're authentic with Hashem, if it's an authentic conversation, then you will feel the closeness. There are so many brachas in your life before this week and halavai for the rest of your lives, and even this week, there are brachos. So If you express that with authenticity, you'll feel close to Hashem. But our times in our lives, and certainly this is one of them for all of us, when we're in pain, that doesn't show a lack of emunah. To express that pain to Hashem, in many ways, is the greatest form of emunah. To be upset at Hashem, how is that lack of emunah? I'm not frum because I'm angry at Hashem. What are you talking about? Adarabba. It's the firmest thing you could be right now. If you are, I'm not telling you should feel angry. I'm saying, but if a person did, ignoring Hashem, abandoning Hashem, that, God forbid, could be a lack of emunah. But turning towards Hashem with that authentic feeling that you're having, 100% that's emunah. You have to believe in your worthiness to David, your worthiness to have an audience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your worthiness to ask, to demand of him. So these are three different things, each one different, not equally easy, and not necessarily going to equally speak to each of you, but each, any one of them, let alone the triple crown of all three of these, if you could really internalize these, any of these three mindsets, it will absolutely impact on a practical level your davening. Now let's use the rest of this year to discuss practical things. Okay, number 10, so let's skip to that, which is our fourth piece of advice, if you're counting in that sense, but we're kind of shifting focus. Says the Rambam, of course, based on Sugyas in Masechta Brachos, it's not a chiddush of the Rambam, but he's passing it here, I gave you the Rambam. It's incredibly important, and I have to tell you, if I had to diagnose the biggest challenge of my own davening, in general, and specifically this week, I would say this is it. Says the Rambam, based on Chazal, incredibly important to prepare ourselves. The Rambam quotes the famous idea. Well, first we'll see before we get to the underlined part. Says the Rambam, "Ketzed hi hakavana." How do you have kavana? Sheyifne es libo mikol hamachshavot v'yira atzmo k'ilu omed lifnei Hashchina. You have to clear your mind. Right? He doesn't say it happens automatically. No one just gets dropped from Shamayim focused on davening, focused on the conversation. It's an active verb. It's a requirement. Yifne es libo. You have to try to, so to speak, you know, deep breath, as it were, clear your mind. Just like you might have, if you had a big competition that you were about to enter, maybe you're about to give a big speech, do a big something in your life. Right? We know what this means, so to speak. Deep breath, calm ourselves, focus, clear ourselves of the distractions. Says Ram, that's what you have to do before davening. And only then can you then visualize, right? A lot of times you know this, right? Modern psychology, especially in the area of sports psychology, but not only, we've got the power of visualization. Right? Visualize yourself, if you're a doctor, doing the surgery. Visualize yourself if you're a lawyer, making the case. Visualize yourself if you're an athlete, taking the penalty kick. Visualize yourself. Getting it in, of course, not missing it. That would be bad. But again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm still not a sports, but apparently this stuff really works. Baduk umenuseh, tried and true. They've shown many studies where these things really help. It's not a chiddush of modern psychology. Chazal knew this. The Rambam mentions it here as well. Yira atzmo ki'ilu. How do you translate the words yira atzmo ki'ilu? Visualize. Exactly that. The Rambam is speaking like a modern psychologist. Yira atzmo ki'ilu. Visualize yourself ki'ilu omed lifnei Hashchina. I try to do this every time I daven. I can't say I'm always successful. But I try to do this. This is right after I say Hashem Sefasai Tiftach. Before I say the next word, I try to visualize exactly this idea. And therefore, says the Rambam, but what makes it so hard? And why, for example, am I, David Gottlieb, so often not successful at that? Because there's one practical tip you need, says the Rambam. L'vichach tzarech leishev ma'at kor ma'tfila k'lachavin es libo v'achach yispal b'nachas u'betachanunim. Says the Rambam, you should not do what I do usually, which is run into davening. Typically a minute or two exactly late. I'm very rarely more than that late, and I'm even less rarely early. But I'm always like a minute or two late, just a little bit late. So yeah, on a practical level, if you're late, especially for a shacharis or something, you're catching up. But the Rambam is speaking about something more subtle, but I think it's just as important. If you don't have a chance to stop, and again, so to speak, breathe in, breathe out, visualize, clear your mind, you just run in and start trying to daven, I'm not saying it's impossible, but the odds are way against you being successful for that davening. You will hugely increase your odds of success if you practically take a moment. Now, the Rambam quotes, and we won't read it inside, and it's based on, again, the Sugya Brachos, about how the Chassidim HaRishonim, and Avos, right? Perkei Avos, right? That's the mission, right? It's in Brachos. No, it's a Brach. I got it right the first time. In Brachos, thank you. They took a Sha'achas, whatever that means. Literally an hour, I don't know. But you don't have to be the Chassidim HaRishonim. It's okay. You don't even have to be the Chassidim HaAchronim. But 1 minute. Again, I if you could do this for 5 minutes, I'm sure it is better than doing it for 1 minute. But 1 minute is infinitely better than not doing it at all. Whenever I have done this, it's been a game changer. I just don't do it enough. And that's why it's so important to try to come early. You know, and when it comes to davening, on time really means a minute or two early. That's exactly what the Rambam is teaching you. I'm not good at that. I need to work on it. But just because I'm not good at it doesn't mean I don't see its value, and therefore I'm happy to share it with you. Yes, sir.
How do you visualize the Shechina?
So you can't really in a true sense. So if I thought back over the course of my life, I don't know, but probably there are times that I made the mistake of visualizing, you know, Santa Claus. Probably not in red, but still. But some human form. I think sometimes I imagine it almost like the Wizard of Oz, like just a curtain, but knowing that there's something behind it. But whatever I'm doing, I am aware that I know that's not it. So I think you have to borrow any image that would help you, I think is important. And if you could do it without the image, it's fine too. The point is, the image is the vehicle. It's not the goal. The goal is that you really, really feel like you're talking to Hashem, like a conversation. Rav Tzadok HaKohen Milublin and others point out, he's not the first person to point out, but he points out in a very profound way. This is not on the sheet, but since you brought up the question, I'll just mention it now. He talks about how all the brachos, every bracha, by the way, not just in Shemoneh Esrei, if you eat an apple too. What do we say? Baruch Ata. Second person. Right? That's imminent. Right? Hashem's right here. I'm talking to him. Right? If I started saying, hey, you, and there was no one around me, we know what we would say about such a person. So if you're talking and you're saying, you, Hashem, well, if you don't believe it, you're talking to yourself. But if you believe it, it's Baruch Ata. Now it's true, and Rav Tzadok discusses how come by the end of the bracha we switch to third person. Elukeinu Melech Olam. There's a dialectic. We go back and forth. Because reality is no one can stay even forever, let alone maybe for more than a few seconds or milliseconds, in the Atah permanently. So we say Baruch Atah, and then it's almost right away. We're back. Forward and back. But there's a sense of Atah. So whatever you can do to get yourself in that mindset, that's what the Rambam is recommending. Next. Very much related. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Sort of about the times when I really have to burn up, I tend to stop in the middle of bracha, whatever it might be, whatever brings me, and just sort of talk to Hashem in here. If it's like, it could really be like anywhere, not only like Toronto later, but if it's like, look at you, and I'll think of someone, be like, hey, Hashem, I really like this person, and I really want them to be saved.
First of all, that's fantastic. So I hope, time permitting, I'm going to get to the bottom. This is what's discussed in source number 20. But just so I don't forget, in case we run out of time, you're 100% correct. One does not have to limit that to Shema Kolenu or Lakai Netzor. I wouldn't necessarily do it in the middle of the bracha, unless you're using like Hebrew and even like one of these Hirat zones that are in some of the Siddurim, like Verfeinu. But certainly at the end of each bracha. No, I understand what I'm saying. But the point is, if you get to Rofei Chaleim Yisrael, and you think about that person or whatever, or even in the middle, while you're saying the words, you're thinking about your Bubba, your Zaidi, whatever, whoever's sick or something like that, your friend, whoever it is. 100%. That's totally legitimate. Again, there are some halachas about how to do it in the middle of brachos. That's why I'm hedging a little bit. But in principle, what you're saying is great. Yeah, it's one of the other techniques, which is, you know, novelty. I didn't get to that yet, but that's for sure a good one. Okay? Anyway, if you look at sources number 12 and 13, this is really a continuation of the Rambam's idea. So you could, if you want to, for your own notes, you could call it a new idea or the same idea. But says the Shulchan Aruch, Lo yimaher lispalel miyad kishi nichnas. Again, based on sugyos and brachos, you're not supposed to just kind of rush in and daven. You're also not supposed to hang out by the door. Rather, you're supposed to go in, and it's not just literal, but it's a metaphor of saying, settle yourself. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah points out, source number 13. Don't just run in and start davening, but rather allow yourself to settle in, so to speak. Okay? Next, source number 14, completely new practical idea, which maybe you benefit from in yeshiva, but you should understand why. Source number 14, Shulchan Aruch brings down the halacha of makam kavua. Now, why am I stressing this? As the Mishnah Berurah does in source number 15, because most people, I'm afraid, I think, in shuls, for example, maybe in yeshiva too, but certainly in shuls, people can be very, very into makam kavua, like their favorite din. They're very frum when they kick you out of their seat. It's my makam. I know you got there on time and I came 26 minutes late, but it's my makam. You know, makam kavua. It's a din. I wouldn't do it, but I'm very frum. Makam kavua. Come on. For a lot of people, it's just like, you know, they're assigned seat in business class. Like, this is makes them feel chush if they have a seat. Maybe their friends are there. It's always where they are. It's their ticket to the country club that they have that seat and you don't have that. That's not what it's about. If that's why you're dafka sitting in the same place every day, you've missed the point completely. Says the Mishnah Berurah, source number 15. If you daven in the same place every single day, and again, it's really the Shacharach, but the Mishnah Berurah burns out, it's more likely to help you have kavana. Now, how so? We can understand what the Shacharach and the Mishnah Berurah are telling us if you take a look at the last part of the Mishnah Berurah, 15. Gam kishem espal bebeso, yikva mokom shal yitbal beluhu bebenei abayis. Not just in shul, you have a mokom kavua. Now, you're not supposed to be davening typically from your house. Like, that's obvious. But let's say a person has to daven at their home. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you shouldn't every time look for another place. It should be a place. Now, why? The answer is, I think we all learn this. If I could bring you back to our previous PTSD, the early days of Corona. When the shuls were closed, people were davening at home. Not everybody, for sure not. Lots of people around the world made the point that it was some of their best davening ever. Now, some of it was because out of the seriousness and the fear of the moment that helped focus the brain. But a lot of people found a certain comfort in that regular davening at home. What happened? When you have the same, I would venture to guess that overwhelmingly, maybe even 90% of the people who said they davened well at home in those days, whether they knew this Mishnah Berurah or not, they were keeping it. They were davening in the same place. And it probably wasn't with the sitter resting on the TV while it was on. Right? It's obvious you need to have a quiet place, an appropriate place. But the same place, why? I'm going to use a word that's very appropriate for your generation. Because location can be a trigger. Not like some silly microaggression that they'll talk to you about whatever ridiculous college you guys go to after this place. But in the best sense of the word, place, location has association. If you keep on davening day after day or time after time in the same place, and now let's go back to the shul, which is where you're supposed to be, or the yeshiva this year, that means your brain subconsciously associates that place with that activity. And each time you go, oh, this is where I daven. This is where I learn. Which is, by the way, not our topic, but this is why, potentially, Batala is so destructive. Not only because every minute you're bottling, you're not learning Torah. That is the obvious part. But because you have every minute you bottle, and again, it would be much better, infinitely better, if you feel the need to bottle, go out to the Mavoah, go to a classroom. But if you're bottling in the makom where you usually learn, if you're bottling in the makom where you daven, each time you do that, if you're checking your phone where you daven, I'm not even discussing it about doing it during davening. That's should be an obviously no-go. But even just where you daven and where you learn, Each time you do that, you're diluting the power of the place. If this is a place that when I'm here, I'm learning or davening, over time, that will become a trigger. That becomes an association. And that helps kavana. Says Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah, that's what makom kavua means. Not I get to kick you out of my place because I left my talis bag in there from last Shabbos. That's just silly, selfish, and unfriendly. Real makom kavua is based on this idea of a trigger, of an association. But that means you have to, if you use the place for that thing, then when you go there, you're already, you're starting, you know, at the 40-yard line. You're ready into the drive. You're starting with momentum. Okay, let's do a few more, if it's okay. 16 is a very interesting one. And it's interesting because the Aruch HaShulchan gives two opinions. And I think the two opinions relate to what we saw in the beginning, which is that I said there's no silver bullet. Different things will work for different people. But says Aruch HaShulchan, what about using a sitter? So for some people, using a sitter is a really big benefit. It really helps. And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. Yesh mispalim mitoch a sitter. Why? What's the purpose of a sitter? To have more kavana, kadesh yichav and yoter. But then says the Aruch HaShulchan, some people do better when their eyes are closed. Not looking in. But what's the key point? Clearly, there are two options. There shouldn't be three. Either look into the sitter or close your eyes. What shouldn't you be doing, especially during Shemona Esrei? Looking everywhere else. That is not going to help anyone's kavana. Obviously. Again, if in the moment that helps, I think that's fine. But again, that's not the same thing as looking around and being distracted. Okay? But I think the default should be one of those two things. Okay? And I think those can really, that can help. Okay, well, we're almost done. Two more quickly, we're going to end. Let's skip to 18 and 19. 18 and 19 is the Ramah with Mishnah Berurah. And this is none other than shuckling. Who would have thought? You probably wouldn't have guessed. The shuckling's in the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Ramah, Nagu hamedaktikim litnanea b'sha'a shemispalim. People move around when they're davening. They're shaking, i.e. they're shuckling. And he quotes a pasuk. As the pasuk says, Kol atzmosei tomarna Hashem mi kamocha. So, on the one hand, what the Ramah seems to be saying is something very deep, and the Mishnah Berurah and others point this out from that pasuk, that the maila of shuckling is that you're in a certain sense praying with your whole body. It's not just your mouth that's talking to Hashem, but kol atzmosai. The whole body is into it, and therefore your tefillah is not just, you know, a 10, but it's an 100, because the whole body is expressed in it. Now, Mishnah Berurah also points out that there are other people who dafka have better kavana without it. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's famous in the name of that Rav Moshe Feinstein stood at attention. Didn't move an inch, a millimeter. And if I'm not mistaken, I'll double down, I think the story goes that he said that I think he was, maybe when he was in Siberia at some point before he moved to America, you know, some Russian or some communist, you know, Cossack or soldier or whatever, you know, like had a gun at him or whatever it was, and he could move. And he's the rest of his life, he said, that fear that he had, if you will, that his life was dependent on what comes next, and he couldn't move an inch. He wanted to capture that every time he davened. That's how he should feel when he's davening. So for him, that was the trigger. And says the Mishnah Berurah, Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. If for you standing at attention is better, stand at attention. If for you shuckling is better, then shuckle. The only thing you shouldn't do is shuckle just because you're trying to show off how firm you are. And also try not to throw out your back, okay? You know, you've seen certain people in the middle of Shana Aleph, certain seminary girls. Nebuch. Okay, don't throw out your back. But on the one hand, there's kol atzmosai tomarna. You could say it's almost a philosophical, almost a metaphysical idea that my back, my arms, they're also davening. But I think there's a much simpler, more prosaic idea, which is that davening is hard. But the more senses, the more parts of your body, your personality, your essence, the more things you're bringing to it, each one has a chance to help. The more of your body that's involved in something, the more you're in the something. Now, obviously, the most important thing about anything you'd be doing in life, especially davening, is your mind. But having other things involved too can help kavana. Last but not least, and this is what you mentioned before, source number 20, famous sugya from Masechta Brachos Chavtes, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ha'osa Tfilaso Keva, Ein Tfilaso Tachanunim. Says the Gemara of Rabbi Eliezer, if a person makes his davening Keva, it's a bad thing. Now, Keva we usually think is good. Makam Kavua, a Kvias in davening, a Kvias in learning. Kvias means set, consistent. But says the Gemara in explaining what's the problem, my Keva, if your davening is the same all the time, that's a problem. Why? You say, what could be bad about consistency? So, in essence, what the Gemara is telling us is, if you have the exact same davening on a day in which nothing particularly exciting happened, and it's the same day, it's the same tefillah as the day you got your dream job, and it's the same tefillah as the day she said yes, and it's the same tefillah as that day you became a father, and it's the same tefillah, Rachamon Letzlan, when somebody you love passed away, and it's the same tefillah when you got fired from the dream job, and it's the same tefillah, God, if it's always the same, that is as far from Yikruhu Be'emet as possible. If you're real, then of course what you're going through is going to impact the tefillah. The length could be impacted for sure. The passion, the intensity of this bracha or that bracha. And one of the ways to express this idea of authenticity is to add to your tefillah. Now the minimum is the text, but that's not the maximum. That's the floor, not the ceiling. Says the Gemara, you should be mechadesh, add things. Again, there are halachos which are a little bit beyond the scope of now when we have to end. And I can follow up with you, or I could send you guys sources if you're interested. There are differences, perhaps, in when you add in Shema Kaleinu, how you add in other brachos, but you can add in all brachos. Make the davening meaningful by, get many, many, if not all, human experiences can fit into categories that are in all those brachos. There's very few things that you have in life that are completely unrelated to tefillah, the nusach, I should say. But either way, to be specific about it, if you have a friend, someone you knew from camp, somebody you know from yeshiva, who was injured, so don't just say Rifa'enu. Speak about him or her. Mention his name. If, in a completely different context, let's say I'm saying hypothetically, if you knew that your dad was out of a job or something like that, and Parnassah was tough, so don't just daven Barech Aleinu. You don't have to wait till Shema Aleinu. Barech Aleinu is the bracha on Parnassah. Speak about it. At this time, again, there's so many, Yerushalayim, Yircha, other things. You're having trouble in Shir. You're having trouble concentrating. You're having trouble making through Seder. Learning's hard. Gemara's hard. I don't understand a Mordechai Shir. I don't understand a Tarragon Shir. Whatever it is, I don't understand a Shirai. Whatever it is, I'm having trouble. Atachonein Ladam Das. Talk about it. Ask Hashem, help me. Help me read the Gemara better. Help me understand Shir better. Help me have more concentration. Help me better Chavrusa. Atachonein Ladam Das. What else is the bracha there for? If you now that might and in 3 months when you're learning great, then you don't have to ask for that. I mean, you should always still be, you know, asking Hashem for help. But still, the point is now I'm having a hard time, so let me ask for it. At a hard morning seder, let me ask for it in mincha. Each time you're going through different life experiences, and this is just an extreme one now, but this is a lesson for life. And I think what you said before is correct. Contextualize. Make your davening speak to your unique situation. If you do that, then it'll be a game changer, not only for that bracha. I'm going to finish with this. It's obvious, I think we all understand that, if, God forbid, you had a relative who was sick, and you were really thinking about that person in Rifa'enu, that would be a really intense bracha. I think that's obvious. What I'm telling you is, and you'll try it, and you'll tell me I'm right, I'm confident, if you can do that for any one bracha, it will lift up the entire tefillah. Because that will bring home to you in a way that nothing I'm saying can, but because it'll be your experience, not just me preaching, you'll be living it, you'll feel you're talking to Hashem. And once you're talking, you're talking. High tides lift all boats. One great bracha has the ability, potentially, to change everything. So each time you do that, and the more the better, but each time you do it, it's not going to affect only that bracha, which is already good enough. Half a loaf is better than none. One diamond is better than none. But it actually, on a just a logical, intuitive, game theory, so to speak, level, is likely to make your success overall more likely. Okay, so I want to wish all of you great success, not only in your learning in the new Zman, very exciting. Chorev Zman of a new year is a very, very exciting thing. So b'hatzlacha to all of you in your learning and in your davening, and especially in this uniquely challenging situation that we all find ourselves in. Do your best to really work on your davening. If you do it, not only will it, I believe, hopefully help the situation and help the soldiers, but if you can really grow from your davening in this experience, it is something you could potentially, I hope, keep with you your whole life. And that is my bracha to you. You are welcome. Thank you.